for knowledge beyond dreams. Discover That's the Way Love Goes, a collection of short stories by Mark Marcus. Go to thatsthewaylovegoes.net and let the dreams begin.
Every day across America, people wake up suffering from symptoms of diseases that have never been identified. There are thousands of illnesses passed from generation to generation, genetic diseases about which doctors know next to nothing. But inside the National Institutes of Health, the government's premier medical research facility in Bethesda, Maryland, there's a small group of scientists devoted to unraveling the mysteries of the human body and finding cures. The doctor in charge, William Gall, takes on only the hardest of the hard cases.
There is a really significant percentage of the American population that has a rare disease.
Millions of Americans.
We are talking about millions of Americans. There's no question about that.
Dr. William Gall is the tireless force behind the Undiagnosed Diseases Program, investigating illnesses so rare they don't appear in any medical book.
What defines a rare disease?
A rare disease in the United States is one that affects fewer than 200,000 individuals out of the 350 million citizens in the United States. That would be rare by legal definition.
By your definition? Because you have a different definition.
Something that affects 200,000 people isn't all that rare to us. I mean, when we're talking about rare diseases, the disorders were affecting between 1 and 50 people in the world.
I'm so tired.
45-year-old Christine Davidson is one of those people. She's been struggling with an undiagnosed condition for more than half her life.
I kind of feel like my muscles are just torturing me. Yeah, my spasm in my hip squeezes so hard it just pops my bones.
They are torturing you.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Whatever is wrong with Christine has left her unable to walk and gradually taken over her body.
I have like frozen shoulders, so like I can't really lift my arm. And I have restrictive lung disease, where the muscles are tightening so much, I only breathe like 50% of what a normal person would breathe.
After years shuttling from one specialist to another, she traveled across the country from her home near Seattle to see Dr. Gall.
I'm just getting to the point where I'm really at my last leg, so this chance to come here to be evaluated was really a big deal for me.
4 years ago, when Dr. Gall created this program to help people like Christine, there was nothing of its kind in the U.S. Here in his lab, scientists search for links between rare unknown diseases and genetics. As with most of his patients, he suspects Christine Davidson's own genetic makeup may be at the root of her illness.
Do you have a brother, sister?
Yeah, I have two brothers that are totally healthy.
Yeah.
And two sisters that do have health problems.
But not this. So you have four siblings and your dad.
Yeah.
And they're all available for us to get blood from if we need it?
Yeah.
As part of her evaluation, Christine must undergo a week of intense testing here at the Clinical Center of the National Institutes of Health. Dr. Gall has a small staff and a small budget, $3.5 million out of the billions the government spends on medical research here.
So what's unique about what you do here?
Well, we think there are a couple of things. For one, we don't take insurance, and that allows us to see patients for a week at a time as inpatients and get done within 1 week what will often take a year or two on the outside. But the second thing is that we're able to gather together a bunch of experts within a single room or within a single admission in a way that often can't be done in other places.
So who pays if a patient comes to you and you accept them? Who's paying the bill?
Actually, you are. I often tell the patients it's taxpayers' money at work. But what price would you put on making a diagnosis for a family or a patient that has desperately sought one for years?
Sometimes 20 years, 30 years.
Sometimes, yes, sometimes even decades. And what price would you put on the new discovery that one makes for a disease that now has applicability to other patients, unknown, untold, not seen yet? And the possibility of allowing that diagnosis to be part of our medical armamentarium.
At the clinical center, we met another one of Dr. Gall's patients, 19-year-old Matthew Parker. He was just beginning his week of testing.
When was the last time you played tennis?
Probably since I was 15.
Matthew was once a promising tennis player. Today, he can barely move, crippled by joint pain so severe it hurts to chew his food.
Any time that we find a base, a region like that, that's deleted.
Dr. Gall thinks missing genes in Matthew's DNA may be the cause.
Really, what you have has all the earmarks of that.
He does his best to explain a very complicated subject.
A single nucleotide polymorphism, and if it's a million SNP array, those SNPs are how far apart is the test.
That gentle touch of humor is part of his bedside manner. He's also careful to lower expectations, warning that even here, they've only been able to give a complete diagnosis to 45 out of 450 patients.
And our chance for that, it's still only in the range of 10-20%.
That may not sound like much, but Gall and his team have solved cases that eluded elite institutions across the U.S., and they've discovered two new genetic diseases. A dozen more are under scientific review. Dr. Gall's desk is stacked high with medical records and referral letters for thousands of patients applying to the program, which can only take 150 to 170 cases a year. He personally reviews every single case, and he's the one who has to make the tough choices about who gets in and who is rejected.
That's part of the triage process, which is very heartbreaking and difficult to do.
Because you know how devastating it is for someone to be turned down.
We do, and we see that repeatedly when the patients come back to us saying, you know, you are our last hope.
It's a painful part of the process for you.
It's very difficult. I would say it's the most difficult thing that I've done in my life.
Because genetic diseases often appear early in life, 40% of the cases he accepts are children.
Oh, there's Bryce.
Bryce Bennett is 4 years old. He suffers from seizures that began soon after he was born. His parents, Jerry and Tara, have been on a frustrating medical journey his whole life, trying to find the cause.
And when was it first recognized that there was a neurological component to Bryce?
It was February 16th of 08 is actually when it was.
Well, you remember it exactly,
yeah,
don't
I
you?
Remember.
And why is that you remember?
Well, because that was the first time we took him to our local hospital, because I knew that it was definitely a seizure then.
While Dr. Gall and his team work on finding a diagnosis, Bryce and all the patients get help with new medicines, treatments, and therapies. After 30 years at the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Gall can call on a network of specialists who volunteer to help solve these cases, a process that could take 2 years or longer. When Sally Massagi met Dr. Gall, she didn't have that much time.
What can you tell me about her case?
Well, Sally's referral letter was sort of interesting. It came from an endocrinologist at Duke who said, in my 38 years of practice, I've never seen a case like this. And so that caught my attention. And then the pictures caught my attention, too.
What did it look like to the doctors who were treating you in those days?
One doctor said to me, you look like you're on steroids. And I think that probably all of them thought that I was and that I was just lying to them.
Sally Massagi was a healthy woman in her 40s when her muscles began to grow out of control. She looked like a bodybuilder. Her leg muscles became so large she could barely walk. Her symptoms stumped more than a dozen specialists for years before she finally got a call from Dr. Gall's office.
What was that like when you got that phone call?
Oh, I was so excited. I was so excited. It was having a possibility of life when I had not had one, you know.
Was it your last hope at that point?
Oh, it certainly was. I didn't have any hopes, yes. And they were, all of them had been gone. I was out of things to try. There was nothing.
Whatever was afflicting her was spreading from one muscle system to the next.
This was now invading her heart muscle as well. Once it gets as far as the ventricles,
it would kill her.
It was said to be fatal, right?
As the unknown disease advanced, Dr. Gall's team made a dramatic discovery. She had a rare form of cancer affecting the plasma cells of her bone marrow.
And so I was thrilled and excited, you know.
You're probably the first person in history to be thrilled and excited to have that disease.
Probably.
And you finally knew what it was.
Right. They weren't going to figure it out at the autopsy.
Her diagnosis and a stem cell bone marrow transplant saved Sally Massagi's life. That was almost 3 years ago.
So what did that feel like for you to be able to solve that case?
Well, it was spectacular to make the diagnosis, but it was even more spectacular to have her get through the transplant.
Christine Davidson's case is more typical. She's still waiting, still hoping. But in the 6 months we've been following her case, the results have not been encouraging.
How long will you continue to search for an answer with Christine? I mean, at which point do you say, you know, we're never going to have anything for you?
Well, in a case like Christine's, we probably will continue for years because, as I say, another case might come along to inform this case. But we don't have any great clues right now to pursue.
At the moment, there are also no great clues for Bryce Bennett. But for Matthew Parker, there are some answers. Dr. Gall and his team confirmed he has a rare inflammatory disorder that they're trying to treat, but they may never find a cure.
It's an incredible window into the human spirit to see people at this juncture, in other words, with a desperate disease. Again, I liken it to war. There are certain epic things in life when you see another person die or another person give up a life for someone else. And we see that in the way that people conduct themselves under these very difficult circumstances.
What's that like for you, I mean, as a doctor and as a human being?
Well, it's inspirational to me. I mean, it's what keeps us going. And it frankly, it makes me feel more human.